I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, it's our 100th show.
Yes, how exciting.
How exciting. Exciting for me, exciting for the listeners. And what I've done is I've selected a couple of past interviews that are favourites of mine, about a favourite place of mine to compile the show. Now, where do we start the program?
We start off in Lightning Ridge, and you're chatting to Judy and David from the Option RV Facebook page.
Fascinating people, Judy and David, and what an incredible job they've done with their Facebook page. Started out with a small number, and in such a short time, the numbers have escalated to more than a couple of thousand by now, I would imagine. Straight after that,
we're chatting to Barbara, and she's from the Australian Opal Centre in Lightning Ridge.
Lightning Ridge again, because it's one of our favourite places to visit. And also, the Australian Opal Centre, one of my favourite places, because not only do they discuss opal, also fossils. Very interesting. And, Lynn, I've kept the best right to the end. We are chatting with
Neville Thomas, and he's from the Tasmanian Light Horse C Squadron, 3rd Light Horse Regiment Historical Troop.
That is a mouthful, Lynn.
It is, and we met him at Sheffield at the Steam Fest.
Okay, now I'm not going to say what he does. All I'm going to say is happy 100th show, Lynn. A great selection of music,
as requested by the people we interview.
Now, I think there's only one more thing to do.
On with the show.
G'day, listeners. Welcome back to Roman Oz. This is Phil C here, and I am chatting with Judy and David, and they are involved with the Option RV Facebook and the page, and they're currently at Lightning Ridge with a huge event. How are you both going today, David and Judy?
Great, thanks, Phil.
Yeah, we're rocking it.
Absolutely rocking it. I heard, Judy, you guys had a fabulous night there at the Opal Caravan Park last night. They had a Hawaiian night, and your head's still spinning from it. Is that right?
Too much singing, I think, and dancing.
Fabulous. All right. Well, let's talk about your group. Now, Judy, you're the administrator of the group. And you've been associated with it for quite a while. David is the events coordinator. So tell us a little bit about the group, Judy. Like you mentioned to me earlier that when you became involved with it as the administrator, there was only a small amount of people, and now it's huge. So tell us a little bit about the group and how the numbers have grown since you took over.
Well, I took over. The group was formed in 2016.
Right.
And I was the third member in that group once it was formed, and then I signed Dave up, so he was the fourth member.
Uh-huh.
And the lady that created the group owned an Option RV. She was sitting on a veranda one day and decided they were going to start a group.
Right.
So when she got to about 87 members, she contacted me and asked me if I'd like to administer the group because she was selling her van.
Right.
And her businesses were taking off and she didn't have time to do it.
Okay.
So I've been the administrator since about December 2016,
mm-hmm.
and we've grown from about 87 members and now we're over 1,400 members.
Wow, that's a huge amount of people in such a short space of time. How do you manage to make it grow so quickly? What do you do to attract people to it?
I think it's word by mouth, and when people see our vans out on the road, like they'll look at the vans and come over and have a look, and that we invite prospective buyers to join the group as well,
uh-huh.
so they can ask questions of the owners.
Yes.
And I think because the vans that look so good on the road, even after 6-7 years old, we end up picking up quite a few members.
Yeah, and a lot of new prospective buyers that are obviously interested in the Option RV range because they are an incredible caravan. Which is the one do you particularly own? Have you got the Traction or Distinction? Oh, you got the Tornado. Okay, yeah.
But we upgraded it when we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
We've had extras put on.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So in relation to your group, how many have you got out there at Lightning Ridge at the moment?
Well, we haven't done a final count because we did have some people stuck in the floods and some cars broke down. I think we would have made about 105.
Okay.
We've got four cabins, mm-hmm. people in cabins that didn't bring their van.
Right.
But they came to join us.
Yes.
And I think there was about six en suite.
Okay. Okay. So, David, you said you're the coordinator, the events coordinator. What sort of stuff can people expect to be involved with as far as the events are concerned if they just choose to become a member of the Option RV group?
Well, we have our annual event in October, and we've been predominantly around southeast Queensland, but we've come in to do into Lightning Ridge this time.
Right.
It's been a little bit different this time. We normally have catered events, but because we're so far out, we've made this one self-catering.
Mm-hmm.
And we try and line up some entertainment.
Right.
We have the fabulous Mel and Susie playing here tonight.
Oh, they are fabulous.
And they're fantastic.
They are fantastic.
Unfortunately, last night we had a late operation because our band were stuck and couldn't get through to the Lightning Ridge
mm-hmm.
from Rewarrina.
Yes.
So good old Spotify helped us out.
Mm-hmm.
And we put a speaker on and played some music and had mm-hmm. some dancing, and we made our own fun. We had a ball. Had an
absolutely
absolute ball.
Fantastic.
We've given away some prizes for best dressed. We've tried to still make it the Hawaiian theme last night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we gave away some prizes to our best dressed people and tried to involve the kids into it. It's very much family orientated.
Right.
And yeah, we're having a ball. We've got some tours lined up for people to go and visit the sites here, the Chambers of the Black Hand and many other sites.
Yes.
And we've got a Barefoot Bowls Day on Monday, weather permitting.
So you will organise all these events, you, David. So if people get involved in the group and they say, okay, we're going to go on this big event at Lightning Ridge, what can we expect to do? You're the one who says, well, I've organised a tour to the Chamber of the Black Hand and we're going to have a Hawaiian night, and I've organised Mel and Susie, the Bush Poets, they're going to be out there. And you tell them all this in advance so they know what they're going to expect to do and see out there?
We generally do the itinerary around about 1 or 2 months prior.
Okay.
Judy does that. Judy does all the itinerary. Mm-hmm. And
the organising of all the tours and everything. I do all that. Dave goes into action when we get here.
Ah, so you're like an MC come DJ.
And you
got the party swinging last night.
That's right.
And poor Judy's now suffering with a sore head.
Yes, and sore legs from dancing too much.
Fantastic, guys. So you mentioned before you normally do your big events in Queensland. This time you've decided Lightning Ridge. Have you already got one sort of thought out or nutted out for the next year's event?
Oh, after this event, we're probably going to go scouting and look for another event. Nothing. Or another event site. We have nothing planned as yet.
Right.
And it is getting harder and harder to find these places because our group is getting bigger.
So big.
We started off our first event in 2017 with 40 vans.
Jeez.
And we tend to be growing by approximately 30 vans per year.
That's incredible.
This is our third attempt to get to Lightning Ridge. So for the last 3 years, I've been trying to get us here. The first in 2020, it was cancelled because of COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
21 was cancelled because the Queenslanders couldn't get it into New South Wales to come to Lightning Ridge.
Yep, yep.
And now we get flooding, but we're all here. We've
yes.
made it. That's how keen everyone is to get to our event. We try and make it fun for everyone, the older, the younger, the children. It takes quite a lot of organising, and I wasn't even sure if we'd get to this one, so I haven't found a venue for next year.
Yes.
We've got some ideas from people here at this event, so we'll go and look at that after we get home. We live in Townsville, so we travel to South. So wherever the majority of the group is, I try to keep the event in that area.
Okay. So if somebody wants... Yes, go on, David.
Sorry, we will probably announce it January or February. We try to get it announced early in the year so people can plan ahead.
Okay. So you announce it on the Facebook page?
On our Facebook page.
And what's the name of the Facebook page for the benefit of anybody who wants to check it out?
It's Option RV Caravan Owners Group.
Okay. Option RV Owners Group on Facebook.
Caravan Owners.
Option RV Caravan Owners Group. And you find that on Facebook. Well, you guys, how do you go when you want to ring up a venue? Do you say, well, we've got 100 vans coming, can you fit us in? Because sometimes you can't fit a group of 3 vans in. How difficult is it for you to get the venues, the caravan parks?
We do a little bit of scouting when we're on our tours. We have a look around. We take advice from the members in the group if they think it might be a good spot.
Yes.
I always need to have dog-friendly cabins. I need to have internet for a lot of our people are business people, so they need to be able to pay their workers and stuff like that. So I've got I've got disabled in our group as well. So I always look for something to accommodate everyone.
Yeah.
And it is getting bigger. But, yeah, we haven't had any problems so far.
Okay.
And if we do get to a point where too big, well, maybe the showgrounds or unpowered camping sites, or we'll make it work.
Okay. I guess the only criteria for being a member of the group is that they're either a prospective buyer of an Option RV, or they have to have an RV already, an Option RV already.
Yes. An owner, have one being built.
Yes.
In the build stage, prospective buyers. That's pretty much covers everyone.
It makes perfect sense, because you wouldn't want some scallywag coming along in a Jayco, would you?
Absolutely.
With an event of 100 Option RV caravans.
I don't mind if they're there and they come over and say, hey, we like the van. We might, this is how I think the company has gone forward, because people see the vans on the road.
They are a quality build.
Yeah.
And they're a fantastic family. It's a family-owned company. Lovely family who support us every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we like to give a little bit back to them by
advertising.
Them free advertising.
Yeah, look, I was speaking with Philip and Lynch the other day, and I've got to tell you, and I have met Philip at one of the caravan shows, and I've really thoroughly gone through the entire range of Option RV vans at 7th Street at Heatherbrae with Aidan Saggers, and I have to tell you, of all the caravans that I've looked at multiple manufacturers, models, and so on and so forth. I'm not just saying that because I'm chatting to you guys. Option RV to me would have to be one of the best built quality appearances inside and out. They're a fantastic unit, and you can understand why so many people are gravitating to this particular make of caravan. I can fully understand how your group's grown from 87 to 1,400.
And I think the reason, one of the main reasons that this company's doing well, is their after-sale service.
Okay.
It's so quality. They even look after, pre-loved van owners.
Okay.
People go out and buy a second-hand van. We always tell our second-hand van owners to contact the company and let them know that they've just bought that van.
Mm-hmm.
So then Lance goes and puts all their details on her file. So if they have problems with the Swift ovens, there was a big
recall
on those.
Oh, the Swift ovens.
So with them having their names with Lance, she was able to contact them and say, hey, your oven's been recalled,
yeah.
So, and this is for people that have bought secondhand vans as well. Decals, if they're coming off, they'll get them sorted for them. Fantastic. They're just amazing.
They just have that personal touch that the major caravan companies don't have.
Well, that's so important. And also one of the other things that I found very interesting was when I spoke with Philip the other day, that the first thing we discussed was weights and things, because I asked him about the full range. A lot of caravan dealers, and I'm not mentioning names or models, manufacturers in particular, they don't really seem to be too fussed about that. A lot of them are more interested in volume and sales, whereas Philip was very, very you know, adamant that you've got to have the right tow vehicle to suit the style of van you're going to be pulling and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
So to go into that side of it as well is pretty special to me. And it's to a lot of people that, you know, buying a caravan for their first time may not know that their car's not suitable for what they want to buy and so on and so forth. And I read so much in different forums where people have bought, and then they get it home and they realise my car's not legally allowed to pull this thing. It's too heavy.
But not only, yeah,
it's too not late only, then.
It's a massive safety issue too.
Mm, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I've got to thank you guys. I hope you're having a fantastic day out there. I know you had some bad weather the other day, but you made up for it. You still had your Hawaiian night. What have you got planned for the next couple of days out there at the Ridge?
We're having a group photo shoot this afternoon,
right,
if the weather holds out.
Okay.
And our prize draws tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mel and Susie will be entertaining us.
Yeah, great
for
girls.
A while tonight.
Yes.
Tomorrow we have a barefoot bowls day lined up.
Pubs in the scrub.
Yes.
I'm getting my day.
We're having a convoy. We've got about 70 cars. Going out to
Growen Field.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we've given them in their welcome bags, we've given them all a car flag, so we'll all have our car flags on, and Dave's going to have a drone up there.
So if you're in Lightning Ridge, you won't miss us tomorrow.
That's fantastic. You're obviously so passionate about the particular brand and make of caravan, and to have got this group from 87 to 1400, and it's growing by about 30 vans a year. Oh, wow, that's an incredible effort, guys. Hats off to you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you.
Yeah, and
we love what we do.
These vans aren't cheap, you know. A lot of people use their superannuation, go out and buy a caravan so they can do their end of life travel and stuff like that.
Yes.
I wouldn't do what I do if I knew that we weren't going to get support. The group is fantastic. Everybody in this group work together. They have fun together, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? You
brilliant.
Know,
yeah.
Getting on the road and
meeting new friends.
Yep. Yeah, our friend base, Dave and I's friend base, is mainly Option RV owners now.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's, thank you for involving us in your radio show.
Oh, look, my pleasure. My pleasure. Because, as I said, I think the vans are quality. Lightning Ridge is an absolute one of my favourites. I've been out there numerous times. And Mel and Susie, if you've not seen them, have you seen them before?
Yes, and they're fantastic.
Mel and Susie, absolutely love those two ladies to death. And it's been a pleasure. I hope you have a fabulous time out there, and I'll keep you posted. Unfortunately, I don't have an option at the moment, so I won't be able to join your group. But but I'll certainly keep in touch with you guys, and you let me know how things are going. Or if you've got something special coming up and you want us to make mention of it, just let us know.
Thanks very much, Bill. Thank you.
All righty. You're very welcome, Judy and David. I've got to wind this up now. And before I do, I've got to play you a song. Now, what's your favourite Aussie song or band?
Look, my old Aussie favourite, it's got to be Men at Work Down Under. I love that song.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. All right, David, Judy, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
There you go, listeners. David and Judy from the Option RV Caravan Owners Group on Facebook. Check them out. And we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Men at Work's Down Under.
In a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies, I met a strange lady. She made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under?
Listeners, with Roaming Oz, and I'm in Lightning Ridge at the Australian Opal Centre, and Barbara is going to tell us all about this wonderful centre. How are you, Barbara?
I'm fine, thank you, Phil, thanks for coming into our little fossil showroom.
All right, now tell us a little bit about the fossil showroom. So paint us a picture in words for our listeners.
I would love to do that, because here at Lightning Ridge we not only have opal, but we have opalized fossils.
Okay.
And they're unique in the world.
Right.
And they're opalized because the opal in Australia is sedimentary. That means it's laid down with water. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we have a few dinosaurs that have been laid down. Mm-hmm. And opal is formed during the age of dinosaurs.
Right.
So it's a pretty exciting discovery. And if it weren't for opal miners, nobody would ever see these fossils.
Right.
Our collection, and this is only a tiny little display that we have to show you, are gifts or specimens donated by opal miners for tax credits.
Right.
So I'd just like to alert you to the fact that opal mining is a business this century.
Uh-huh.
It's not just grandpa digging down the back. You can't fly by the seat of your pants anymore. You've got to have some credentials and big bucks in your pocket.
Right.
I know we have Outback Opal Hunters on the television that paint quite a different picture, but be aware, coming to the Opal Center is something that you'll remember and want to return to, because it's a work in progress. And when you drive out on the yellow car doors, you will come to the excavation that is all ready to go. The building we have a model of here for you to look at. It's solar paneled roof with vents that capture the breezes. It sits in the ground, and it's designed by Sydney architect Glenn Murcutt, who's well known in the world for his ability to deal with the semi-arid environment.
Okay.
Now, I know it doesn't look very semi-arid at the moment because we've got the weeds growing up around your ears.
Uh-huh.
But ordinarily, we don't have that much rainfall. It's an exciting project. It's moving along. We have $20 million already from the state and federal governments and our local shire.
Mm-hmm.
It's community-based. It's a non-profit organization. And we represent all of the opal fields in Australia because we're the longest surviving opal town.
Okay.
And, of course, we're closest to the Big Smoke.
Yes.
And to the coast where everybody else lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the way to somewhere these days.
Absolutely.
I mean, with the storytelling of the Historical Society, we bring these opals and fossils alive.
Okay. So these, you mentioned before about the fossils here, that
This is New South Wales, and we were talking about Queensland before, so tell us about the difference here, Queensland, New South Wales, with the fossils.
Thank you for remembering that, because we are the beginning of the trail that goes up into Queensland.
Right.
Some of you have been to Winton, and of course their wonderful display. Ours is the beginning of that trail, and we're the only dinosaur fossil site in New South Wales.
Right.
Now, up in Queensland, the Boulder Opal is what you may know. It's the opal in the cracks of ironstone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here at Lightning Ridge, we have lots of ironstone, but it seems to only attract lightning. And I find that so strange that Boulder Opal seems to stop at the border, and that's only about 30 kilometers north.
Okay, so you've got no explanation, no theory as to what...
Well, when you think of ironstone, of course, that is volcanic.
Okay.
It's heat and pressure, but the cracks fill with that sedimentary opal.
Mm-hmm.
And Lightning Ridge Opal, I mean, maybe this is why we have a reliable resource of black opal, but our opal is freshwater opal, where White Cliffs, Cooper Pedy, and on west of us is saltwater opal. We were on the edge of the Billabong.
Okay.
Now, we have lots of opal in North America, but it's all volcanic.
Uh-huh.
It cracks. It's a different style of a gemstone. Mm. So not only do we have such a reliable resource of opal in Australia that's accessible, we have the opalized fossils, and that is something to crow about and why we are doing this wonderful in-the-ground building. It's the Australian Opal Centre, and you'll want to come and see the progress, because we are moving forward, and you'll never know how long it'll take us to get down there with our formations.
Okay, so because I was going to ask you, like, that's quite a big building.
Yes.
And have you got any idea as to when that's going to be completed?
Well, I think that what we're doing is stages, and I believe that the first stage is meant to be open late 22.
Uh-huh, okay.
So we will at least be able to walk in, and there'll be, you know, it'll be a work in progress as we walk in, but at least we'll see something.
Yes.
And this is what we're looking forward to, is seeing something. We have a wonderful website, in case you'd like to Google us, AustralianOpalCentre.com.
Okay.
Yes. And there's all sorts of information in there. But our little showcase, we have the tiniest little pine cones that are opalized, but they have a very big story to tell. And because we are freshwater opal here, we have river pippies, we have vegetation, we have lungfish tooth plates, yabby buttons, and as you'll remember from your knowledge at school, most opal has no color.
Okay.
It's called potch. Now, here at the Opal Center, we also have some display of social elements found in the old diggings, like rusty bits. And, well, we do have a set of opal teeth. They weren't found underground, but they certainly have been a curiosity over the years. We had an entrepreneur come to town back in the 60s.
Right.
And he was from Parks, very local. But he just thought it would be kind of fun to have his dentures carved in opal.
Okay.
And he knew just the dentist in Parks who would do it for him. So he flashed his gums to so many people who just, well, he couldn't stop smiling and got tired of that.
Yeah.
So he took them out and put them in the Diggers Rest Hotel here in a little niche so that they were always smiling at everybody. And one day they went missing. Well, there was a great hoo-ha in the town that they'd been stolen. As a matter of fact, they hadn't been stolen. And eventually the Opal Center was given the teeth because the name of our little local newspaper for the Opal and Fossil Center is Harold Hodges Opal Teeth.
Okay.
And Harold Hodges lives on forever with us and his teeth that are in the showcase. And we have a nice panel of his teeth on the wall outside our little showroom. And in fact, a little book has just been published about his story and the teeth.
Okay.
It's a bit of fun. So social history is very much a part of it. And at the Historical Society, of course, as mentioned, it's our collection of stories and documentation that brings these opals and fossils alive and makes them memorable.
Fantastic.
You
fantastic.
That little anecdote?
Mm. So it's definitely a place you'd recommend tourists to come and have a look at.
It's a must-see place because this building is going to be iconic.
Yes.
It is said it will rival the Sydney Opera House.
This new building?
The new building. We just hope the cost doesn't quite raise that high.
Okay.
And fingers crossed for us.
Fantastic.
But things are happening, and it's all very much a part of all of us because okay. we've worked hard to get this far. Right. With a lot of support from outside people like yourselves yes. who come to visit us, drop a little tin, money in our tin, and of course visit our town and go underground and become opal lovers.
It's
our national gemstone.
And the important thing too, you just mentioned your tin there, because a lot of the things in Lightning Ridge are volunteer based, aren't they?
They certainly are, and that's because we're the last part of the Shire to join up in 1957.
Mm-hmm.
We're sort of considered the renegades, really.
Right.
Because lots of people go away in the summer months. Others are staying more and more permanently because we have modern air conditioning now, yeah. and we have modern everything that you think you want in the comfort of your traveling and in your life. So more and more people are spending time here, and of course it's a great place to retire because, you can just walk up and down the street and pick up opal. It's the truth. It's the thrill of the chase. It's a lifestyle, I assure you. Come and find out.
So we've got to just keep looking down to the ground. Is that correct?
We're not stupid. We're hopeful.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Barbara. It's been another pleasure chatting with you here at the Opal Centre.
Well, thank you for coming in and thank you for asking about it.
Oh, definitely. Now I'm going to play you a song. What is another favourite song of yours? Favourite band, favourite song? Got to be Aussie.
Well, I'll tell you what, because we're talking about dinosaurs 100 million years ago, what about Sounds of Then?
Okay.
By Jinja Jang.
Jinja Jang. Ganga Jang.
Ganga Jang.
All right. That's it. Not a problem. Well, stick around, listeners. After Ganga Jang, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
Straight. Oh, g'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roaming Oz and we're in Sheffield at the Steamfest and I'm chatting with Neville Thomas and he is with the Tasmanian Light Horse or the Sea Squadron 3rd Light Horse Regiment Historical Troop. How are you going today, my friend?
Very good, thank you.
Mate, thanks for being part of the program. Tell us a few things about yourself, first of all. What inspired you to become a member of the Tasmanian Light Horse Group?
I have an interest in military history.
Okay.
I have an interest in horses.
Right.
My great uncle went off to the war, first war in the 5th Light Horse from Queensland.
Right.
I had another relative on my mother's side who was in the 9th Light Horse from South Australia who was killed in Samark. My stepfather was in the Light Horse between the wars.
Right.
My family, to a certain degree, have a history dating back to the Indian Revolution.
Right.
Back in the mid-1800s.
Okay.
I did do 22 years in the regular army.
Okay.
And my niece is now... We slowly go up in ranks.
Okay.
I finished... as a sergeant. My niece is now a captain.
Right.
I have one uncle was a sergeant, one uncle was a bombardier.
Right.
So, yeah, we get there.
So there's a lot of army and, I guess, history in your family.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what inspired you.
Yeah.
Now, you love horses. Is it difficult to do what you do on one of these horses? Because just for the benefit of the listeners who haven't been to the Steamfest and seen you guys, just explain to us what it is that your troop does.
Right, we do what's called skillet arms.
Okay.
Skillet arms was a training regime used by the Light Horse to get the men familiar with their horses, and particularly after the First World War and into the 20s when they were then issued with sabres, to get them familiar with using a sabre on a horseback.
Right.
And from that, they develop like competitions. So armies in Europe had been using tent pegging as a training thing, dating back hundreds of years.
Right.
But so it was sort of brought in as part of the skillet arms, again, to get the soldier and the horse familiar with each other and working together.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take a lot of training. If you saw us today, you'll know that we had a couple of horses that are learning.
Yes.
And they're fine at home where there's no noise, no distractions, no crowd.
Yes.
Right? But when you come to an event like this, they go, and that is very much the same with the Light Horse. I mean, we by law can't fire any firearms here.
Okay.
But in the training of the Light Horse, they would have been firing blanks around them and all this sort of thing to get them used to noise and everything that goes with it. So
everything they're likely to experience when they go out and actually do what they were trained to do.
And we do this because we enjoy doing it, but we also enjoy bringing it to the public because if people like us don't keep it alive and going,
of course,
it'll die away and nobody will know what it's all about.
And absolutely, you're right. It's kind of like trying to keep your heritage alive, I guess. And the Light Horse, they were considered to be sort of the elite in the army, were they not? Or
yeah, they were. There's an old saying which other corps, regiments dispute, but it goes along the line, a gentleman of the Light Horse, men of other regiments.
Okay, so what did it take then, do you think, or do you know, to become a member of the Light Horse back in the day? I mean, did you just have to be a really good horseman, or did you have to... Did you have a bit of breeding?
If you ignore European armies where cavalry was basically the upper crust area, in Australia, when Federation came about, and yes. they formed the Light Horse Regiment.
Yes.
It was on a couple of things. Skill.
Right.
But you had to provide your own horse.
Okay.
Right. The thing being is that right up to basically the Second World War, Australia's army was all militia. Very small numbers of regular soldiers. So there was no demand in the Australian army for horses.
Okay.
But there was a need. There was a need for light horse. Light horse, of course, is you had cavalry, and their task was to fight on horseback.
Right.
You had mounted infantry, who were just infantry provided with a horse to transport them.
Right.
But the light horse, their job was an amalgam of both cavalry and mounted infantry. They were trained as an infantryman, with the rifle and bayonet being their primary weapons, yes. At least initially. And but they also carried out reconnaissance, scouting, defence or offence to cover large bodies of troops, to cover advances or retirements.
Yep.
Right. So they were a multi-talented group, I suppose, but with horses being a cheap commodity, but expensive to maintain, the army preferred to get men to join the light horse who had their own horse.
Okay.
You went on camp, the army got the vet to check your horse, got the farriers to shoe them, and then they paid you to take your horse there.
Okay.
Talking to some of the old fellas that were in the light horse up early and up to and early into the war, they said it was a great work because you'd go to camp for 2 weeks, the army would shoe your horse, the vet would check it, they'd do all this sort of thing. They'd pay you 4 bob a day or something,
yep.
for being there, but they'd give you 10 bob for your horse and they were feeding it as well.
Okay.
So they thought it was a great work.
Okay, but then what about when they ultimately ended up needing their horse and going to fight?
Right, okay, so in the First World War, when they raised the AIF and then they raised the Light Horse Regiments, what basically happened is that you basically had to resign from the Light Horse Militia and join the Light Horse AIF.
Okay.
And so you would turn up with your horse, generally if you were coming from a Light Horse Regiment like that, they would have your record. But for, you know, the farmer's son who lived down the road who used his horse to round up the milk cows in the morning or whatever, if he wants to join, he would turn up. And the stories vary, but they go something like this. You'd turn up and say, I want to join the light horse. And the first question would be, do you have a horse, son? And he'd say, yes. And he'd say, okay, take it with this piece of paper and go down there and see that gentleman down there. And they'd go down and have a look at the horse and say, yep, he's a good type, we'll take him. So he signs the piece of paper. And then they'd come back and... The recruiting officer would say, okay, that's good. Now go over there and see the doctor. And you go over there and see the doctor, and the doctor would say, oh, you squint a little bit, I think we'll reject you.
Yes.
So you go back and see the recruiting officer, and he'd look at the doctor's report, and he'd look at the fact that you've got a good type horse, and he'd say, nope, you're in.
So he's more interested in the horse than the soldier or the rider.
Well, they were. Well, they say they were.
Uh-huh.
But no, they were interested in both. But,
yes.
And then they would, once you'd done your your attestation papers.
Right.
Right. They would swear you in, and then they would pay you for your horse. And then the horse became army property.
Right.
And then the next thing they do is say, jump on your horse and ride down to the lines with this piece of paper, you're in the light horse.
Okay. Simple.
Yeah, you know. I mean, the process varied Australia-wide.
Okay.
But when you see it, there's the same sort of theme that runs through all these stories from Western Australia or Queensland or New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia. You know, the same, you know, sometimes, you know, they'd say, oh, I'm not sure if you can ride well enough, you know, take your saddle off and go and jump that fence. Or, you know, do you know which end of the horse is the front end and which horse, end of the horse is the back end?
Right.
Yep, okay, that's fine. So.
Okay. Yeah. So what about, let's talk about the horse for a moment. You said, so they're all different types of horses. As long as you had a good, healthy horse.
Good, healthy horse. They were looking for certain types.
Okay. And what were they? And, okay. And are you looking for similar things when you choose a horse to do what you're doing?
Well, we don't have the exact requirements. So what we're looking for are horses that we feel will be suitable for what we do. Parades on Anzac Day or special occasions or whatever. So they have to have a certain calmness and quietness about them.
Yes.
Right? You know, something we can use here. But again, we try and stick to the requirements. I mean, if you got a big guy who's 6'10", right, he's going to look funny on a 15-hand horse.
Okay.
But then he's going to be able to mount a 17-hand horse.
Yep.
We would probably look the other way if he's keen.
Uh-huh.
In the First World War, they might have said, well, you know, 17-hand horse.
Pretty big.
Not, yeah. Yeah.
Easy target.
Yeah. So the maximum height that they were looking for light horses, for horses in the light horse, was 15.5 hands, or okay. 1.5 metres in today's language,
okay.
at the shoulder.
Okay.
There's a reason for this. You can ask any of these guys here who do Anzac Day. We sort of go into what they call field order or extended field order. And so we put bedrolls on the horses. We put the carry their extra saddle blanket, the water bottles, the packs, all that sort of stuff. And one of the most interesting things seeing is a new recruit doing his first Anzac Day. He goes to mount, finds that he, you know, the horse that he could sort of just walk up and step on, he now, you know, can't find the saddle.
This is too much gear on the horse.
And many's the time, just about all of us here don't have any trouble with putting our foot in the stirrup and stepping up. But come Anzac Day, we've got to use a milk crate or something. It just makes it easier.
Just to get on board. Yeah.
You've got the rifle slung across your shoulders, and that has a tendency to whack you in the back of the head if you're slightly off balance. And
So what do you actually do in the troop? Because you do different things,
yeah,
don't you?
Like,
yeah,
do you handle? I'm the troop sergeant.
You're the troop sergeant.
For want of a better word, the boss.
The boss. Okay. So you.
I'm only the boss because they won't let me be anything else.
Okay. But is that because you got the most experience and you've been?
I suppose. Yeah. I've been doing this since 1994. So. A lot of these, you know, I suppose, with the experience I've got in that, you know, sort of makes it. I mean, I'm getting to a stage where I'm probably going to have to slow down on some of the things I do, but...
Yep.
So
it'll be fairly demanding on both you and the horse, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it is.
So
demanding on everybody and the horse because, you know, we... as you can see here, we're pretty well set up. We're
yes.
family orientated, so
yes.
we've got all the family as well.
Yes.
You know, we like to be comfortable. We don't actually have to be out like they were in the field.
No.
Okay. But it moves smoothly because most people know what's got to be done, and you know, if the owner of the horse is not there but there's a problem, somebody else will just step in and fix it up. So okay.
So that you can all interchange positions and do everything out there, because there's some of the things out there
outside,
out on the field.
Outside there in what we do at the Skillet Arm.
Yes.
Some people don't, you know, don't feel they're confident enough to ride at Skillinar.
Okay.
Some are, but we do have to have ground crew. So,
yep.
You know, people do the ground crew, and they're very good at it, you know, because sometimes we say, you know, when you go out there, you've got to be like a spider with eyes all around the top of your head, you know, keeping an eye out for horses and soldiers charging down with lances or sabres.
Well, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you. Is there anybody ever been injured? Or with, you've got lances, you've got sabres, you're riding pretty fast. I mean, has there ever been any accidents? Or anybody ever fell off? Or
I would say we've all fallen off at some stage.
At some stage?
Yeah.
But not whilst putting on a show or just practising in the field?
Oh, no, it can happen in a show. Yeah. I've had a lady who popped up an umbrella at one show just as we were flying past. And I don't know whether the wind caught or something, but it jumped the fence. So the horse went sideways.
Wow.
I continued straight ahead, but the horse went sideways.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I did manage to land running.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know how I did it. At one time we were doing a show and actually it was in front of the governor, and I was leaning down out of the saddle and I hit the peg, and I had a strap break on the girth and the saddle slipped. So we're going flat strap. I managed to come off on the right-hand side of the horse, hit the ground running, holding the sabre with the peg on it, and pulled the horse up before it ran into the governor's stand. And you could I didn't hear it, but they said a lot of people out there said you could hear the crowd go, "Oh, he's fallen," in a sort of a joyful voice. Uh-huh. And when I hit the ground running and pulled the horse up, there was, "Oh, he's not."
Oh. So they just thought that was part of the show.
They must have, right? I mean, I've been told about it enough times by different people, it's almost like it's a memory, but I don't actually remember it. All I remember is trying to stay on my feet and pull up the horse before she ran straight into the governor's stand.
So what's the most difficult thing that goes on out there? Would it be with a lance? Or
the most difficult thing?
Yes.
Tent pegging with the bayonet.
So what about this gentleman here to our left? He's looking very distinguished. What would his position be in the light horse?
John's what we call a recruit.
He's a recruit?
Yeah.
So he just gets paid to look like he's a...
Well, yeah, no, he's starting to learn what we do.
He's,
okay. You know, training up his horse. You know, this time next year he'll be doing Sam's job.
Okay. The most difficult job in the place.
Yeah.
So how long does it take you to train? Like from you've obviously got to have basic horseman skills.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. Knowing how to ride is a good start.
Yes.
Then learning the routines, that's the next thing, and then combining them together to do the show.
It still must get a little scary at times if you're just learning it, because you're leaning right down and picking things up off the ground. You've got one leg in the saddle and stirrup. And
yeah, but I mean, Phil here did the what we call the act of faith, and he held that ring.
Yes.
You've got to have confidence in the rider that's wielding the sabre.
For sure.
My son, I used to do it with my son.
Yep.
And I've held the rings. A number of people have held the rings. And as we always say, when you see the rider take off with the sabre there, it's not so bad. But as it starts getting closer, the sabre seems to get bigger and pointier.
As it approaches.
Yeah. And so, you stand there with the ring in your hand and you don't move, because that's when you'll get hurt.
Yeah, if you move.
Yeah.
So you've just got to have 100% faith in and know that you...
Yeah, we haven't damaged anybody yet.
No. Fair enough.
I mean, sometimes if you don't get your hand away fast enough and the ring's taken, the guard of the sabre whacks you on the knuckles, but, you know, that's just like, well, it's not dangerous. It hurts, but it's not dangerous. Yeah.
And how many of these festivals have you done, the Steamfest? Because you've been doing...
Steamfest?
Yeah. As long as it's been running?
Or? No. We must have done at least 10 or 12.
Do you guys perform sort of rain, hail or shine? I mean, we've got a perfect day today, but yeah. What about us bucketing down with rain?
Well, God is a light horseman, and we've never really had that problem. Okay. We certainly had rain, but we've never had to cancel anything because of rain, have we?
No. So you've never had a thought of, geez, it hasn't rained today, but it's rained for a week. I wonder what the paddock's going to
be. Oh, yeah, we've had that.
Yes.
There was one. We went up to Wynyard.
Yeah.
Right? And we couldn't do anything because there was so much water over the area.
Yes.
Two-day event. Yeah. Saturday we spent standing
on the horse. Yeah. Yeah. And there was just so much water, it wasn't safe to even try.
Yeah. So yeah. Dangerous for you and for the
yeah,
horses.
Yeah, dangerous for us, dangerous for horses.
So basically, two or three inches of water.
Yeah.
We tried to do a bit of cantering, but it was just...
Yeah.
Just too dangerous.
It was too dangerous, yeah.
Fair enough. Now, I do have to finish with a song, though. Neville, what's your favourite Aussie song?
Australia Will Be There.
Australia Will Be There. All right, Neville, we're going to wind this one up, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
That's all right.
And we'll be back, listeners, with more Roman Oz straight after Australia Will Be There.
Lots and lots of arguments going on today as to whether dear old England should be brought into the fray. But all right thinking people know well we had to fight for the Kaiser's funny business. It wants some putting right. Rally round the banner of your country. Take the field with brothers or the foe. On land or sea, wherever you be, keep your eye on Germany. But England, home and beauty, have no cause to fear. Should old acquaintance be forgot? No, 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 no. Australia will be there. Australia will be there. You have heard about the Emden ship cruising all around. She was sinking British merchantmen wherever they could be found. But one fine morning early, the Sydney cove in sight, she trained her guns upon them, and the Germans said good night. Rally round the banner of your country, take the field with brothers or the foe. On land, on sea, wherever you be, keep your eye on Germany. But England, home and beauty, have no cause to fear. Should all the acquaintance be forgot? No, 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 Australia will.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.